Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into another episode of Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Today, we have a Women Worldwide alum returning to the show to give us the update on his work as a brand strategist. He's going to share his new book and how he's helping to turn ventures into admired brands. Joining me once again is Fabian Gerhalter, principal of Finian, which is a Los Angeles-based consultancy. Fabian is a columnist for Inc. and Forbes, and his thoughts on branding have been published by the likes of The Washington Post, Mashable, Entrepreneur, and The Huffington Post. He's a frequent speaker, and he's also a mentor to entrepreneurs worldwide. He is a Global 100 mentor at the Founder Institute. Lastly, he is the author of the number one bestseller, How to Launch a Brand, which is a very good book. It's kind of like a workbook. And he's going to share his new book, which is called Bigger Than This, How to Turn Any Venture into an Admired Brand. Fabian, it's great to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
No, it's really nice to have you with us. And I'm going to throw out one big question that probably could take like 10 hours to answer, but what's new in the world of branding?
What's new in the world of branding since we last talked? Well,
yes.
You know, I really think that branding kind of became the new advertising. You know, advertising used to, you know, in the 80s, 90s, it always used to have this fake aspect to it, right? It's kind of like people dressed up their product to be something so that people can, consumers can buy into it. And that just doesn't work anymore. It's like these brands kind of lost their costumes, right? They have to keep it at home. And now they have to be naked and be themselves and, you know, lead with transparency. And the big buzzword in branding is empathy. And it's empathy is such a word that us marketers, we kind of cringe when we hear it. But it's really wonderful when you actually think about what empathy really means. And at the heart of it, that's what humankind is all about, right? So there's a really nice drift happening right now with brands where, because of, you know, recent political events and, you know, how society has morphed in the last 10, 20 years, people just ache for brands being more like trustworthy, you know, friends, where they tell them exactly what is in a product, where the product is from, how it's being made, and more importantly, what a brand stands for, right? It's just like how we like to surround ourselves with people that share the same values. That's what brands now do with customers and consumers, and that's actually a big change, because before they used to talk about it, but most of the time they didn't act upon it.
Fabian, you mentioned you know, years ago looking at branding kind of dressing up, which is really on the exterior. Now it really feels like it's about what's on the inside, you know, the values. And you mentioned the whole peer, like brands have to be peers today, especially in social media. It's like-minded people. So how much of the change that you spoke to is actually driven by maybe technology, and what are the challenges there?
It's interesting. I think it's a mixture of politics and social media, because these days there's so much out there that we have to digest every day, and it's so important for everyone to take a stance and to have an opinion. because the world is kind of divided, you know, not only in the US, but in Great Britain and, you know, all over, right? There's more extremes. And since people voice these extremes on social media, people want their brands to be aligned with them and to go into that, you know, quote unquote, fight with them, to be on their side. So that's a huge responsibility for brands to first actually talk politics or actually take a stance, and then to really doing it in a meaningful way, and to continuously and consistently be there for their customers on social media. It's a very fine line that brands have to walk these days. Very, very difficult to manage how much should be said and how much should not be said. And there's a lot of examples, right? I mean, Starbucks is talking out, and they receive a lot of backlash from not their core fans, but, you know, just irregular consumers. But they know that they do the right thing because their core customers, they are with them. Right. So I think there's something that it's a branding wisdom for, you know, for decades and decades, the idea that it's okay to leave a lot of people out if you single in on your core target audience. And we see that more and more now with social media, because with technology, you can very quickly test your messaging because you get a backlash very quickly. So
instantaneous.
Yeah, it's also amazing because with QA testing and, you know, like with small focus groups, everything can be done, you know, in a split second these days through technology. So it really opens up brand communications to a different level.
Yeah, technology is amazing. At the same time, definitely the challenges. You know, it's funny that you said the brands that kind of take a stance and stick to their base, so to speak, that core. You know, years ago, when I was at my agency, we were always advising, oh, be careful. You can't go too far this way or too far that way, because there were so many that you're serving. But it sounds like you're really, because of the level of transparency, because of the expectations that are out there, you can't kind of walk the middle road. Is that sort of what you're saying?
That is exactly it. I mean, at the core, every brand knows their number one customer, right?
And you have to.
Yeah, exactly. And their communication is tailored to that type of person. So yeah, I mean, the big idea of don't talk politics is thrown out the window, which is really insane when you think about it. Just 20 years ago, if you would have listened to us talking today, that brands talk politics. I mean, it's just
unheard of.
It is unheard of, and it's beautiful. I think it's a wonderful thing that really makes them immediately empathetic, right? If you suddenly see a big corporation or a big company, if you see the New York Times, if you see REI, if you see Patagonia, and those are the usual suspects, but even because they politically very clearly steer into one direction more so than the other. But if you see a mainstream brand like Starbucks take stances all the time that are, you know, not necessarily political, but they definitely support a politically leaning cause. I think that's really a beautiful direction that branding is heading in, especially when it all comes from, let's be very quiet and let's just push our one fake message out the door. And let's just say cigarettes make you cool. You know, I mean, things have changed. It's not going to fly anymore.
But do you think it is that a function of the generations that are, you know, whether it's millennials and now Gen Z, and I don't know what's beyond that. But do you think that it's the younger generations that are sort of shaping brands in this way to be more transparent, to take a stance?
It definitely is. It definitely is. And I think with Gen Z, things are going to change again, because Gen Z is a very realistic audience. So they are digital natives. So they're born that way. So for them, this is not, social media is not something that they want to try out, but social media is bread and butter. I mean, it's the norm, right? It's just how they're born. So they will want facts. They will want data. They want the truth. So I think what's going to happen is that those brands that actually speak up, this next generation is born with that idea that brands are super straightforward and that they have a very clear value proposition and that they can only gain the loyalty of me as a Gen Z because we look eye to eye on many things way outside of an amazing product, an amazing UX and superior customer experience, right? Because all of that is a norm to them. I mean, they would not pick up an app if something isn't super intuitive. You know, they would immediately just delete it, right? So I think that it's going to be very interesting to see a generation that is all about data and facts, yet they have these huge expectations of brands as far as their values go and as far as their transparency goes. It's going to be a rough ride for a lot of Fortune 5000s that have a hard time even digitally transforming, right? Like how will they then, you know, become brands that stand for something bigger than even the digital transformation? It's a lot to chew for brands these days.
Oh my gosh, I hope for all the listeners out there that they're taking this advice and understanding that you have to be super straightforward for these younger generations, and everything has to be super intuitive. And what you said about the facts and what's real, which is sometimes really hard to determine in this climate that we're up against. I want to make sure, though, I'm going to do a hard pivot right now, because, you know, the last time you were on the show, we discussed your book, How to Launch a Brand. But I really want to talk about your new book, Bigger Than This, How to Turn Any Venture into an Admired Brand. And I have my copy sitting right here. It's a little book that packs a punch. So maybe you could just give your big takeaways from the book and what you want readers to know.
Well, the big takeaway is it's actually kind of like a total 180 from what we talked about. We talked about how technology is so important and design innovation and, you know, customer experience. And really what I got so interested in when I researched the topic was that there are so many startups and new companies that are launching and they have absolutely no new tech on board. So no tech innovation at all. They have no design innovation, and yet they disrupt the marketplace. And I realized that they really only disrupt, not even a great product either, because their products, most of them are just regular commodity type products. You know, it's like Me Too type of products, but yet they disrupt the marketplace. And it was only through brand thinking. And so for all the listeners who got a little scared about my realistic, you know, view onto what's next with branding and how brands need to be so superb on all of these different levels, these startups, they completely disrupt, but they disrupt without any tech and any design innovation. And I focused on those, and I was on kind of like a media diet. So I read like 2-3 magazines every night from Inc., HBR, Fast Company, whatever, right? All the usual suspects. And I tried to pick up the stories where I realized that it's a brand that actually has a very, very simple product where there's no innovation whatsoever, but yet people go crazy over it. And then I analyzed, why do people go crazy over it? So really, the big takeaway is that you don't have to have disruptive technology or design innovation in order to turn into an admired brand, which is a big epiphany for me, at least. You know, I'm like, wait, how can it even work?
I think that's refreshing. Now I think everybody's feeling a little bit better knowing that, right? You can have something that's simple and that you don't need technology disruption to make your product loved and admired. So in the book, you do talk about 8 traits. Maybe you could discuss a little bit about that and how you win hearts and win minds.
Yeah, absolutely. So, after studying these companies and their stories, I kind of organized the book into these traits that businesses can learn from. And these traits, the different ones, are story. You know, when a brand story is actually bigger than the product, it's belief. When there's a really big empathetic shared belief between a company, a brand, and the customer. And other than that, it's really just commodity product. Cause, what if you stand for the same thing and you support the same cause? And that alone can actually create an entire brand. Heritage, which is a strange one, but heritage... Yeah. There are companies that are solely based on the heritage, and that heritage is defining their brand. And one of those examples is Shinola, right? Shinola is one of those brands where, you know, it's the watch company from Detroit. They basically said, we're going to flip Detroit around. We're going to bring work here. We're going to create handcrafted American products. And Detroit is our brand. And for them, really, even though it might not be a perfectly straightforward and honest story, but it is a story, and there's more to that. But the idea is that the brand is entirely born on the idea of location, right? It's all about Detroit. You think about Chanel, you think about Detroit. Then there's Delight. There's some brands, startups that do the exact same thing everyone else has done for decades or centuries, but they do it in such a fun and delightful way. And they add colors, or they add even colors to communication, right? They're just so delightful that suddenly they break out of an industry that is exactly the opposite, right? So we're talking about companies like Poppin. Some of you might be familiar with Poppin because the colors pop. It's basically, it's office supplies. So think Staples, think Office Max. They saw an industry that is just really still, and it's kind of boring. And it's, you know, I mean, how exciting can a stapler be? And how exciting exactly can a calculator or Post-it be, right? And so they said, well, let's just have it in like 50,000 fun colors, and let's have people be able to like personalize it, and let's have it at the same price because, you know, we can. And then let's package the whole thing in really fun communications and in a delightful customer experience. And they're completely breaking into that very stale, you know, commodity type business of producing these cheap office supplies. Then there's a transparency, which we hinted at the beginning. Companies that are just so very, very transparent in industries that are not known for transparency. So we're talking about banking, not known for transparency. We're talking about fashion industry. Lots of issues with where does my garment come from? You know, like how responsible am I buying this? You know, like what does it do to society? And then solidarity is interesting. And it's also kind of a low hanging fruit, but there are examples like Planet Fitness, where it's actually gyms. Like, we need another gym. We really don't need another gym. There's so many gym chains out there, but it's a fitness center like any other, but they just figured out that they want to go for the people that are not the usual fitness people. So they just say, look, this is a judgment-free zone.
Oh,
you know, you belong here, right? You belong, you know, this is like, we have cookies at the entrance way, you know, you have a cookie before your workout. So it's really disrupting an entire industry just based on solidarity, right? And then last but not least, and then I finish my monologue, last but not least, it's individuality. So when brands create something that is very, very individualized. So may it be personalized, may it be limited, may it be something that is just based on a certain event, and it is then being created right after the event. So something that is very current and individual. So those are the eight traits.
When it comes to the eight traits, do they, or are there some brands that over, it's not like you have to have all the eight traits, I would imagine, but maybe you have some of the eight traits, or do you actually have brands that have all eight, if that's even possible?
You know, it's really interesting. I never, when I wrote the book, I never thought that any brand should have more than one or two, right? Like, I figured that one is it's a huge commitment, right? If we say this is all about shared belief, let's make this our brand. But I had funny enough, my attorney is just starting his own law firm, and he wrote me the other day, and he said, Fabian, I'm currently completely redoing my brand. You know, I was about to launch, but I'm going back, and I'm going to implement all of your eight traits.
Leave it to a lawyer.
my mind was blown because here we talk about, you know, a law firm that is going to incorporate everything from story to heritage to transparency.
I was going to say transparency number one.
I know. And I'm like, this is really great. But here's an asterisk. Be very careful, right? Like plan this correctly, your law firm.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
But it's wonderful. Yeah. So some people actually go the distance. And it's wonderful because none of those are bad traits to incorporate, right? Like you can't go wrong unless, of course, you chew too much, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a brand from the storytelling heritage and, you know, maybe having a cause also showing transparency, you know what I mean? So I could see overlap, but from a standpoint of really making your mark and what are you going to stand out for? It might get difficult to have so many of these incredible traits. Fabian, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break to give some love to our sponsor. I also want to mention that Women Worldwide is on the C-Suite Radio Network. So you can find our shows at c-suiteradio.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the other great business podcasts as well.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Fabian Gerhalter and I were just chatting about his book, Bigger Than This, How to Turn Any Venture into an Admired Brand. So Fabian, we've covered a lot of ground between your new book and just what we were saying about the traits of brands. But I want to talk about you and your professional brand almost. Maybe you could share how social media has helped you to get out there, especially with these books that you're publishing.
Yeah, I mean, social media, really, for me, it's mainly about being top of mind, right? So the idea that you create this huge following, and then afterwards you will immediately get business and people will buy your books, it's not quite like that. But I do believe that if you create real value, and I have this 80-20 rule. So my idea is that 80% of what I put out there via social media needs to be communications that need to be focused around my value proposition. So what do I actually give potential clients, potential readers, potential listeners that they themselves can turn into actions that they can actually use? So that 80%, that's a big chunk, but through writing a lot, through speaking a lot, there's a lot of information that I can kind of like utilize and reutilize that others find extremely valuable. The 20% then would really be more about my own personality, my brand personality, and even sometimes sharing wins. It's actually not bizarre. It's actually enlightening that an audience really enjoys hearing some personal stories. And one of those examples was when the last book, the current book, Bigger Than This, when I launched it, we created this really nice video, and it took a lot of time and a lot of energy and some money. And we were so excited to get it out on social media, and it was nice and people reacted. And then a day later, I put this rather cheesy picture of me with the book in my hand, and someone took it in San Francisco when I was doing the Mentor Box series, and I had it in my hand, and I just like, you know what, I gotta post something on Insta today. I'm just gonna post that photo of me in the book, and I'm just gonna say thank you so much for everyone who bought the book. And it went crazy. Like people were, and I'm like, wait a minute, here's something that I just quickly put up there that just has a more personal message about a thank you message and my mugshot. And I mean, you can learn from that, right? You can learn that it's not just giving advice, but there needs to be this human touch, and people actually really like to feel like there's a real person that actually communicates, in an open way. So that's the 20%, right? That's the personality part.
Yeah, that's a really good 80-20 rule. I mean, we see it with companies all the time where, you know, what they're sharing, or, you know, it's for 20% what they're doing. 80% of what they're doing is for 20% of their customers or their valued base, so to speak. So, you know, you mentioned the brand personality and the human touch. You're right. If we step back, it's kind of funny, because if I were to even look at my own social media, you just never know what's going to get everybody excited. And, you know, to take a look at that bigger picture, I think we'd all be surprised at what people like to share the most and what seems authentic and real, because it's very easy to get caught up with sharing a lot of the advice and the insights, but you have to balance it out with that human, and you are like me, you know, it's that, that connection, that personal connection. You know, so you do share quite a bit of advice and insights that people can take action. How do you actually stay ahead? So you're a brand strategist. That's got to be tough. I know you said that for the book, you were certainly absorbing a lot from a lot of different sources, media outlets. Is that what you do to stay ahead? Are there other ways?
Well, that's exactly one of the things. So my off-screen media diet, as I call it. So I'm trying to read a whole lot in the evenings. Also to take my eyes off the screen and kind of like, you know, balance. It's a life balance thing as well. But I try to work as much with Fortune 5000s as I like to mentor startups. So to me, that really keeps that nice balance of understanding what the next generation of companies is aspiring to do and what their problems are. And also to learn, not only to mentor startups, but to learn from them, right? To learn how they think. And then working with large corporations to really hear their pain points in their brand journey as they're trying to align themselves with the next generation of customer and client or member, or, you know, however they call their target audience. I think between these two and between these three, with including my media diet, if you take the three together, I think it's a nice balance that keeps me informed. And I would say it keeps me dangerous enough to understand, to have a pretty good understanding of what's happening with brands.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do you feel that this consumption of media that you spoke of, and also the, you know, we're going to talk, I definitely want to key into your mentoring as well, but how much of this consumption is daily or weekly? Are you always on, you know, are you always on social media? Are you always online? How much are you offline doing what you do?
So sadly, I'm pretty much like millennials and Gen Zs are, even though I'm not part of that generation. I am very much online, right? So, but I try to have evening hours where I go completely offline. So every evening I go offline for at least 2 to 3 hours. And a lot of my media intake at that point is literally print magazines. And I actually really enjoy that, because it's a very different type of experience.
Yeah, so
and I think
that
your brain, right, your brain works differently when you actually, you know, digest media in printed pages. So that's one way of me going offline. But during the day, I'm basically constantly between startups, between large companies, checking social media, posting social media. You know how it is, right? When you're not a large agency, or you can't A/B test with social media, you just basically constantly put things out that you think would be of value. And of course, you have to screen, right? You have to constantly screen. What do people say about you? What do people say about the brand? What is happening in the world? I mean, these days, things are happening, you know, at the speed of light. So you have to be glued to social media these days, which, you know, it's a blessing and it's a disease, right?
Yeah, both at the same time. What do you think are some of the lessons that you've learned, whether it's launching your consultancy, writing your books, speaking, that maybe you can share with other professionals?
Great question. I mean, different, very different learnings, I would say, for those different things, like launching the consultancy. I mean, the biggest thing I learned is you have to be very focused, right? Just have a very simple offering, become really, really good at it, try to become the best at it, and just do not deviate from it, right? Like basically say no to everyone and everything else and just be very focused on that one thing that you supply people with, which in hindsight, I mean, that also makes it easy for you to actually be seen as some sort of like a thought leader, or for you to have very strict advice for a very specific audience. Because if what you do professionally is so focused, you can very quickly become kind of a leader in what you do. With books, it's very different. You know that you're an author. you should just never write for the wrong reasons, right? I think that some people believe that if they write a book, they're going to win clients. Some people believe they're going to have some sort of fame, or you know, they're going to become rich. And you and I both know that's not why you should write it, especially because most of that is pretty impossible to happen. But you should really write it because you feel like you have something to share for a very specific audience. And it's not about, oh my God, I'm so scared that what I say is going to backfire, because, you know, usually it's very hard for something to backfire, right? And a lot of people are scared of writing because they feel like, well, it might have already been said, or I'm sure there's 60 other ways that people said the same thing. And quite frankly, I don't think it matters, because you are a person, you're your own brand, you have your own opinion, you have your own style of saying something, right? You have your nuances. People listen to you for one reason, they listen to someone else for another reason. And if you just find this topic and you say, you know what, I just don't see much around the way that this has been framed, just go for it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to go back to something you said about launching your consultancy and how it, you know, should be focused, simple. You're building thought leadership, this strict advice. But I mean, from the creatives that I surround myself with, and this is actually a compliment, they are, you know, always onto the next creative big thing. So when you have a creative person like yourself, is it hard to be just focused on that strict piece of advice and not want to go in so many different directions?
That's a fantastic question. So it took me, no, this is really great. It took me a good 12 years to learn this myself. So yes, as a creative, you want to constantly do everything, mm-hmm. and you want to innovate on everything, and you want to kind of like, you know, impact through design. And what I kind of created my consultancy in a way where I create brands, right? So I work with startups or Fortune 500s on creating their brands. And it's a very specific process, and it's very short, and you know, we derive the brand for them. But the exciting part about that is that all of these companies are completely different verticals, completely different staff, completely different delivery of product. And when you shape these brands, that is extremely creative, right? And your mind has to constantly go from one industry to another and one pain point to another. And that's also why I love to understand the different generations, and I need to understand product and user experience just as much as you know, target audiences. So I think, to me, because even though I am in the niche of all we do is, you know, craft brands, and that's all we do, that's where we start and that's where we end, it doesn't feel creatively limiting because of the variety of people that I work with and the variety of brands that I engage with.
You just shared excellent advice. It speaks to, you can be focused and still feed your creative soul. So that's really good news.
Yes.
For all the creatives out there that are listening. Let's talk about mentoring, because, you know, you mentioned that before, and I mentioned it in your introduction. Your LinkedIn bio says that you mentor entrepreneurs. Who's mentored you, and why is mentoring important?
You know what? This is not the answer that you would like, but it's not the answer that I would like either. But the answer is no one. No one actually mentored me. And maybe it was because I was very young when I started my company, pretty much straight out of school, like 6 years out of school. And I do wish I had the right mentor at the right time. I think that I would have pivoted from running my design agency to my brand consultancy much, much quicker, or I would have scaled my agency in more efficient ways. So I feel like I've actually been lacking that in a way. And so now I try to mentor as many people as possible because I feel like I was missing out on that chance. And it's a huge chance to get someone that really can help you, steer into the right direction when you don't even know where you're going. Because a lot of people in business, especially freelancers or, small business entrepreneurs, they're on their own and they just kind of wing it and they kind of go with, the projects that come in, the clients that walk through the door. So that's something that I think is so important. Anyone who can get a mentor and get someone else's time to dedicate to your personal journey and professional journey, it's a huge, huge thing to gain in your life.
Absolutely. Do you think that mentoring, when I think about mentoring years ago, it was really quite different. Do you think there's a lot of mentoring going on social media and online? Do you see that as a form of mentoring the way that professionals are sharing with students or younger professionals?
I think it's very different. I think the mentoring online is more like tidbits of information that you just kind of like, you don't really take them too much to heart. You just kind of like, you take them like any other, quick tweet that you see. It just kind of like subliminally becomes part of your advice digestion of the entire day. But real mentoring, I think, needs to be one-on-one. It can be, via Skype or via phone, but there's something about that human connection that really, there's a lot of trust, mm-hmm. right, with mentors. I mean, the mentor themselves, they have to have a lot of trust in the person that they're mentoring, that they actually can make it, or that they will take their advice. And there's, you can feel that honesty when you're across from someone. And for the mentee to actually trust the mentor's advice, it's a big thing, right? I mean, you might completely change your business or pivot or do things that you would usually not do. And so to gain that trust, it's hard to do that via social media. It's I don't see it happening often. Now, that being said, and going back to what we talked about, the next generation, Generation C, they're not necessarily team players, Generation C. They're very much about, not necessarily that they're egoistic, but they definitely like to go their own way. So I think that when it comes to advice and when it comes to learning, boy, am I afraid for universities with Generation C, right? I mean, right? Because they're the ones that they want to learn through YouTube mm-hmm. how-to videos and on-demand learning, right? Lynda.com, whatever is out there. So I think that the way that people will learn is going to be different. And so most probably what I just said about mentorship, it might change with Generation C, that they might want to get mentors that are more, like online and, at their pace.
Yeah. And I mean, social media can certainly open the doors. You can find people through whatever they're sharing that you might gravitate toward them based on the brand, right, that you see that they're building. And then the door can be open to taking it off social media in the community to, if you're on Twitter, you can go to DM, then you can go to email, then maybe you are on the phone or you're on Skype having a one-on-one mentoring session. So I do think that there's value with social media, but it's going to be really interesting to see. You can't really speak to the future of mentoring unless you truly know what those mentees want and how they want to learn, which, we know the classroom has certainly changed. Phoebe, maybe you can give some advice to all the professionals who are listening that want to win more hearts and want to become admired brands. What would you say to them?
Well, that's the easiest question. Buy my book, right?
Yes.
Buy my book, read my book, act upon my book. No, well, yes, but in all seriousness, find your shared passion, right? I think that's the big thing. Like the passion that you share with your clients, with your customers. and then be super bold about voicing that in a super honest and empathetic manner. And that's really it. I mean, in a nutshell, if you find that perfect connection that makes your brand bigger than the product or service that you offer, and you find a bigger connection, it's going to be the best way that you can ever compete in the future, because any other company can compete with you on price or offering, but no one can compete on that soul that you have, that brand voice, that story, that belief, you know, whichever of those traits. You can own them and you can talk about them until the end of day, and your customers love to actually listen to it. So I think that's really something that's a way that you can turn into a more admired brand.
Excellent. That's right. Find that shared passion and then read Fabian's book, Bigger Than This.
That's right.
Sums it all up perfectly. Okay. Last question. Super easy. Where can people find out more about you, your books, and your work?
Well, I would say the latest website that we launched, which is once again biggerthanthis.com. I think on that they can find out about me, they can follow me on social media, and they can read about the book, et cetera, et cetera. So biggerthanthis.com would be the place.
Terrific. Fabian, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing advice about brands, how you can turn any venture into an admired brand. We really appreciate all of your insights. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It was really enjoyable once again.
And you'll have to come back.
I will.
Launching. Absolutely. You're an alum. I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.